Our theme for the month of September is invitation. And as I explored it, it's a wonderful topic for a month's study. I'm only going to be actually doing one major service on the theme, so I packed a lot in here this morning. So I invite you to spend some time with me now, reflecting on the role of invitation in your life. See what I did there? I invited you to think about invitation. We live in a world where we're surrounded by invitation, and temptation. What's the difference between invitation and temptation? Well, if you've been reading, as I have, the news about the condition of our forests in Nova Scotia, then it might give you a clue in that question. What's an invitation and what's a temptation? Is a beautiful stand of old growth forest an invitation to harvest the bounty of nature? Or is it a temptation to despoil a sacred trust for short-term profit? Now, there is no easy answer to that question. If we hadn't harvested the nature, the bounty of the forest in Nova Scotia, we wouldn't be the province that we are today. That's what fueled our sailing ships and kept our economy running. So it depends on the circumstances, although I think we can agree that present circumstances would suggest that we've crossed the line between invitation and temptation. Invitation becomes a burden when they tempt us to do things that are not in our best interests or not consistent with our values. The video that I hoped you were going to watch was intended to be a dramatized way to invite you to connect with the world around us. We lose so much if we cut off ourselves from nature, living in urban environments. In the reading that you just heard, adapted from the writing of Bob Goff, we're reminded of the invitation before us each and every morning to live each new day fully, ushered in with the day's sunrise. Invitations can sometimes be trivial. Sometimes they can be life-changing. And there's no predicting when a trivial invitation will lead to a life-changing experience. I wonder, just by show of hands, how many of you are here this morning and came here on the first time because you were invited by someone? Anyone show their show of hands if you were invited here for the first time?
Not today.
Not today. No, just in general. If you're here in Unitarian Church because you were invited by someone to come sometime in the past. And keep your hands up for a second. There's another level of invitation. That's you saw something in the press or on a website or in the newspaper. Read something about Unitarian Universalism, which served as an invitation. So that's probably half the congregation felt like you were invited here in one way or another. Well, to be invited to participate in a religious community can be life-changing and it can be surprising. Just this week, I meet with a group of ministers here in town. One of them is a Roman Catholic priest, and he told me a story that I wanted to share with you this morning. It seems this very earnest young man joined the Jesuit order, became a priest, took the vows that all Jesuits would take. Shortly after that, he was invited to a banquet in a large church community for a celebration. And it was a marvelous banquet. There was a delicious assortment of food and a bounteous amount and great desserts. And the young Jesuit was heard to remark, "If this is poverty, I wonder what chastity looks like." Well, invitations come in many varied forms. Some, like the daily sunrise, are repetitive and can easily, though regrettably, be taken for granted, not seen for the marvelous invitations that they really are. Some can be a welcome surprise, like an unexpected invitation to dinner from friends who are visiting your city. Some can be an unwelcome surprise in the form of an invitation to overcome a difficult problem in our lives, one that we've heretofore avoided addressing. Some of you here this morning will be dealing with sadness, with pain, with hurt in your lives. Sometimes we just have to live with these painful experiences, hoping that time will heal those wounds. But sometimes those conditions can be seen as an invitation to make a profound change in your life. I quote here from Elizabeth Gilbert. She wrote, "I've learned enough from life's experiences to understand that destiny's interventions can sometimes be read as invitations for us to address and even surmount our biggest fears. It doesn't take a great genius to recognize that when you are invited by circumstance to do the one thing you've always most specifically loathed and feared, this can be, at the very least, an interesting growth opportunity." It seems to me that the idea of an invitation and the idea of connection are inseparable. An invitation is really an invitation to connect in one way or another. And I think that's what our religion is about. It's about being invited to make a profound connection. Connection with nature, connection with other people, connection with our own emotions and feelings, connections with the systems of justice and systems of power in our society, and connections with whatever it is that inspires our highest aspirations. And some would call that God. Bryant McGill has said, "All things are possible through invitation and love." Invitations can be personal or impersonal, or somewhere in between. An invitation delivered in person is much more powerful than an invitation sent by email, or more powerful than an unspoken invitation like the sunrise that Bob Goff wrote about. I think this is part of the power of Christianity. Some Christians experience the person of Jesus in a very real way. They get an invitation from Jesus in a personal way. I noted earlier in the example of the way we've harvested our forests. It's important to know the difference between healthy invitation and unhealthy temptation, and how to refuse the latter. There are many good reasons for refusing an invitation, including the fact that it may be bad for your health or the health of the plant. On top of that, you simply can't do everything. That said, though, in my experience, we should think carefully before turning down an invitation. An invitation is an open door to serendipity. I titled this sermon, "The Subtle Art of Invitation." So let's explore here some of the subtleties. I think they fall into a few categories. Basically, who, what, and when. The best invitations are always at least partially motivated by a desire to help the person being invited. If you invite someone to participate in something without any concern for the benefit to them, you're really using the invitation as a manipulation for your own self-interest. And you ought to think twice about it. Let me use an example that's close to my heart. Those of you who receive email from the church have received an invitation to come out on Saturday mornings to help serve in our neighborhood brunch, or just to meet and socialize with our neighbors on Saturday mornings. A number of you have already responded, and I appreciate that. This is a project that I feel passionate about, and inviting people to help with this serves my personal selfish desire to see this project succeed. But beyond that self-serving goal, I believe that the experience of a shared meal with our neighbors to the church is a spiritually enriching experience for everybody involved. The invitation to serve is motivated in part by the desire to help the person being invited to serve, to help them build connections in their lives and to cross boundaries that they might not otherwise cross, and to provide a growth opportunity. Another example, when we invite a friend to help us pack and move from one home to another, it serves our needs, but it also provides an opportunity for our friend to strengthen the bonds of friendship between us, to strengthen the connection between us. So in the category of who and what, there is a subtle judgment necessary to know if the invitation really will benefit the person being invited. When there is uncertainty, there is need for thought, and careful thought put into the nature of the invitation to ensure that the person being invited is not just being used. Invitations become burdens when we feel that we are being manipulated into providing a benefit for another person who actually cares little about us. Invitations become burdens when we're invited to do something that we don't have the resources to do as well. Those resources may be financial, or it may be a matter of time or energy. In another month, members and friends of this congregation will receive our annual invitation to participate in our pledge drive. That drive funds our activities for the year. We're very aware that the amount people can pledge, or if they can pledge at all, varies greatly. And so we emphasize that participation in the pledge drive is more important than the amount of the pledge. It's part of being connected to the congregation. The amount of the pledge is not as important. An invitation across socioeconomic boundaries can be a burden if you don't have the experience living outside your own comfort zone. An invitation to the Saturday brunch that I mentioned can be a burden for people on both sides of the social divide if they lack experience crossing those boundaries. But crossing these boundaries, getting out of our comfort zone, developing new social skills is good for our spiritual growth. Invitations also become burdens when we're invited to do something that we don't have the resources to do. In an essay, Christine Painter reflects on two basic spiritual orientations. Each invites us to engage life differently. Using the metaphor of a monk and a pilgrim, she writes, "The monk in me feels the call of moving inward. My inner monk knows the deep wisdom to be found in rest, in slowness, in spaciousness, in not letting the productivity of the world keep me running ever faster. The pilgrim in me feels the call of moving outward. My inner pilgrim feels a longing to travel, to walk across new landscapes, to find myself the stranger, so that everything I think I know can be gently released." Here ends the quote. Each of us is a blend of monk and pilgrim. We alternate between those phases in our lives. There are times in our life when we need to refuse an invitation because we need the time to rest, to reflect, to conserve and renew our energies. And there are times when we need to overcome that inertia and see an invitation as an opportunity to grow and to inject some adventure into our lives. How do we know when to accept an invitation? This brings up the question of timing. Both the timing of extending the invitation and the timing of accepting or rejecting the invitation. It helps me to remember the ancient Greek idea of two types of time. The first is chronos. You can hear the ticking of our clock. Chronos refers to the inevitable sequential passing of time. Nothing we can do about it. Time marches on. This is the time of schedules and deadlines that compel us to issue an invitation and get out whatever needs to be done. The other sense of time, the Greeks called Kairos. Chronos versus Kairos. Kairos is a period or a season that is uniquely right for a given action. The word, the root of the word kairos has been traced to two ideas. The first is that precise moment when an archer has drawn back the bowstring to its maximum and has the bow aligned perfectly with the target, and the target, in this case an animal, is in sight. It's ready for a powerful and penetrating kill shot. But all those things have to be ready at the exact time. The second root of the word is the moment in a mechanical loom when you're weaving fabric and the woof is going back and forth and the shuttle has to get between them. And there's only a very split second when the threads are parted and the shuttle has to make the pass. The concept of kairos reminds me that you cannot force the situation. You cannot fire that arrow too soon or too late. The shuttle can't make it down between the threads of the woof until the moment is right. The stars have to be aligned, as it were, to ensure success. And there's a message there for us in how we live our lives. The Greek rhetorician Isocrates, not to be confused with Socrates, wrote in the 5th century BCE, "Educated people are those who manage well the circumstances which they encounter day by day, and who possess a judgment which is accurate in meeting occasions as they arise, and rarely misses the expedient course of action." This is one of the challenges of life in a religious community like ours. One of the things I struggle with as your minister is to deliver sermons that are an invitation to the congregation that will coincide with the needs of the congregation and with the particular times in which we live. There are tides and currents in the life of a congregation that cycle over months, over years, even over decades. Some of these seem to be somewhat predictable, like the need to allow some time to pass between major projects, like the review of our commitment to a new or improved worship space. After a protracted study and discussion, the congregation needs time to recover before considering the options again. Other opportunities arise without any advance notice. The best recent example of kairos, I think, in the life of this congregation is the timing of our outreach to assist a Syrian family in helping them relocate to Canada. In this case, geopolitics, domestic politics, public mass media, our call to social justice, and the energy and the resources of our people align perfectly. So, in summary, I hope you'll see invitations that are extended to you and invitations that you extend to others as a special and a sacred part of building connections. They merit care in considering what is asked and who is asked, when they are asked, and how they are asked. Invitation is what moves us forward. The universe invites us to participate. The questions remain: who, what, how, and when. But remember, all things are possible through invitation and love. May it be so.